Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Tommy, I got to tell you, I'm a little jet lagged.
Yeah, why are you jet lagged?
Because I just spent the last, 40 hours coming back from Korea, but what an exciting trip.
All right, so tell me about what you did.
Well, what I did, Tommy, was I saw Back to the Future.
Okay.
Literally. I saw probably one of the coolest concept cars I have seen in a long time. Hyundai just did something that I didn't think was possible, and that they made a retro car cool by giving it not only incredible styling, basically think of DeLorean, and I'll tell you the story behind that, meets a supercar powered by a fuel cell and batteries with over 500 horsepower. Mind-blowing, Tommy. Plus, I got to see the new Ioniq 6 and the new Ioniq 6N. I'm going to tell you all about that. But you also came back. You were minying, dude.
Yeah, so I did a little mini road trip called Mini Takes the States, which is this rally with over a couple thousand minis driving from north to south this year. Got to see some cool stuff as well. We can talk about the new Range Rover, which we have at the office, and anything else in between.
All right, well, how do you want to start this? I'll let you decide.
Well, you went on the cool trip, so why don't you start it off?
All right, well, let me kind of work my way through the different cars I saw. So I flew to Korea. Thank you, Hyundai, for inviting me and for taking me out there for the unveiling of the Ioniq 6. Now, you know the Ioniq 5 is built, I think it's the GMP platform that is also kind of a shared platform with, I'm going to say the K word, Kia, but they don't like it, even though it's the same company. I don't like when you say Kia. But anyway, it's built on the same platform as the EV6. And with the Hyundai brand, they're now taking that platform. And because I guess they're Asian, because this doesn't make sense to me, they're taking a crossover and putting a sedan body on it.
What does it have to do with being Asian?
Well, because I think Asians still like sedans. Here in America, we don't like our sedans. It's selling into a headwind. People aren't buying sedans. Maybe they are. I don't know. I'm sure a Camry still sells over 200,000 units. But it's funny to go from a crossover to a sedan. Now, they don't call it a sedan. It's four doors and a trunk. They call it a streamliner.
So that EGMP platform is underpinned a lot of cars as well, including the Genesis, the EV Genesis SUV. So it certainly is nothing too new. And what they're doing is basically maximizing the most out of that platform by essentially swapping different bodies and different form factors on top of it.
Yeah, so the EV GT, of course, is the fast version of the EV6. And now, of course, there's also a fast version of the I'm going to confuse you, so let me not go there. Let's just forget what I just said. Let's talk about the Ioniq 6. So the Ioniq 6 is a sedan that looks a little bit like a Porsche, dare I say it?
Well, it kind of looks like a bar of soap. So what they were going for with this is the lowest possible drag coefficient in the industry because it's an electric car, so they want to maximize the range. And it matches the drag coefficient of the Lucid Air. It's like 0.21 or something.
Yeah, very good, 0.21. And I got to interview the designer, and he showed me exactly how they achieved that number. The other number that they achieved, which is pretty phenomenal, is on the European circuit, I guess, which is different than ours, right? The test circuit that the Europeans do, they got an astounding 610 kilometers on one charge on a 77 kilowatt hour battery, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, but they have a very different cycle.
Yes.
So we rate on the EPA cycle, they rate on the WLTP, which is oftentimes a little bit optimistic, but we'll have to wait and see what the official numbers are from the EPA, because I think it's very possible we're nearing 400, considering that the car's cousin, the Ioniq 5, is over 300 in some configurations.
Yeah, and so what they were very proud of is not only the design of the car, but that they actually increased the range by over 100 kilometers on that cycle. So in real terms, Tommy, that means that now we're getting to a point where electric cars are starting to become, everyday and road trip worthy, because when you start getting these kind of crazy long ranges, then range anxiety tends to go away. Now, the way they did that, you might be wondering, is they increased the efficiency not only of the aero of the car, but also of the motor, the software that controls the batteries and the motor, pretty much everything about the car. They made it more efficient to get basically, you know, 100 kilometers more of range on a platform, which is identical to the IONIQ 5. Now, there's a lot of controversy about the design, right? Some people love it, some people hate it. It's one of those love and hate things. What do you think of it?
I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit contrasting to the IONIQ 5, which is like a retro throwback video game car almost. It looks like a 1980s Volkswagen Golf, which is a fantastic look. And then the EV6 kind of looks like a spaceship with the way that it slopes in the front and the back. And then this does look like it looks a little bit like an Apple Mighty Mouse, where it's kind of just the same slope in the front as it is in the rear. But I love how different it is. It's just very out there. It's very interesting. It doesn't look like any other kind of sedan on the market. And I appreciate that they're trying something bold, which is very commendable.
So I talked with the designer. The video is out there on AllTFL if you want to see it. You can look at the car. I've got actually two videos. I've got a walk around of the video from the show when they unveiled it. And I got a really good interview with the designer. And there's a couple interesting things I did not know. And I'll be happy to explain to you because they're kind of cool. So first and foremost, since it's on the same platform as the IONIQ 5, it's long. So there's a ton of legroom both front and back. But because it's swoopy and kind of droopy, the headroom isn't there. So sitting in the back, my head hits the top of the roof in the back seat. Front seat's fine. Also, a tiny little frunk, enough to maybe put a charging cable into or maybe two ham sandwiches. But a good-sized trunk with, you know, seats that actually recline. But here's the cool thing, right? So Hyundai builds all these cars that don't look alike. You know, so most, specifically the Germans, have this nestling doll, right? The Matushka doll. Approach to design. So basically it's like you have one doll with another doll with another doll. So like Audi A7 or A8. Well, there's no A8. Audi A...
What do you mean there's no A8?
There's an A8. But it looks the same as an
A5.
Okay,
here I'll help you.
As an A3.
How about this?
The BMW 7 Series is the same as the 5 Series, is the same as the 3 Series, yada, yada, yada. You know what I'm talking about. Well, so Hyundai's approach is the chessboard. Does that make sense?
Is that what they told you?
Yes, that's what they told me. So basically, the base of the chessboard is the same, but the top is different because each of the different figures has a different customer base. So obviously, a king is much different than a queen or a rook. And so the base, right, the chassis is the same, but then the top of the car is very different. So the cars do not look anything alike because the IONIQ 5 and the IONIQ 6, you know, the only thing that they have in common, and there's three things that they have in common, which they talked about. Number one is that pixel design, right? So you'll see these little pixels, and the pixel works on a number of layers because in, I guess, Korean language, one of their letters is a pixel. So that goes back to, like, you know, the Korean alphabet as well. Another thing that they all apparently have in common. Anyway, you were going to say something. I'm kind of monopolizing. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to say is there's kind of a pro and the con to having them all look different, right? The pro of having them look the same is that if you buy a 3 Series, you've got that brand identity instantly that, you know, you're driving a BMW, which is in the same family as a 5 or a 7 Series. The con is that they kind of all look the same. So if you don't like the design language of a 5 Series, you're probably not going to like the look of a 7 or a 3. Now, the pros of having them look different is you kind of never know what you're going to get, and it makes it very exciting because the Santa Fe, the current Santa Fe, looks nothing at all like an IONIQ 5, which looks nothing like the IONIQ 6, and that's very exciting. The con is it's hard to develop that brand identity because you never know what you're looking at when you see one on the road.
The other thing that Hyundai does, which is a little different from most industries, most other manufacturers, is that they don't evolve cars. Like, within generation to generation, they completely change the design of it, if you see what I'm saying. And I can't go into this because they basically took me to the design center and they showed me their future cars. Mm-hmm. But all I can say is that, at least now, that you know, the next generation of Hyundai cars does not look a lot like the current generation. It's mind-blowing that, like, every 4 years, they almost start with a clean sheet of paper and redesign the car.
Well, you don't even need to know a future product. You can see that now. I mean, a Sonata from today with the
doesn't look like anything like a Sonata from, like 4 years ago.
The swoopy catfish doesn't look like the boring Sonata from four years ago or the Sonata before that. They all look different. Now, that's good and bad. Like, if you like the look of your Sonata, the next one's not going to look the same. But if you don't like the look of your Sonata, you know that the next one's going to be all new and fresh.
And I'm going to give you a hint here. I would say if you like the look of the Santa Fe, just listen to what Tommy said.
Yeah.
Or if you don't like the look of the Santa Fe, listen to what Tommy said.
Yeah, very true.
So anyway, you know, I got to have fun at the show. The funniest thing that happened to me was I'm interviewing the designer, you know, and we're inside the car. And I guess I did not notice at the time, but there's a very popular YouTube Korean blogger, a girl who influencer, I guess, who decides that one of the things that she's known for is laying down in the back of the car. So I'm interviewing the designer, and somebody takes and, you know, folds down the back seat so that you can pass through, right? And then I look behind me, and there's this girl just laying behind me in the car, you know, with a tight dress. And I was like, oh, my God, this is getting – and there was a guy with her, a videographer, and they were just giggling and having fun. And unbeknownst to me, apparently she's a very popular Korean car YouTuber. And so I got all embarrassed. and it was certainly one of the more interesting moments in an interview that I've ever done. So the more interesting thing, of course, that they showed us, which once again, we also have a video of this, is there's an N version of the IONIQ 6 coming.
Well, I think that one's the one that looks cool. So I think the standard one does look a little droopy front and back. But what they did on the N is they just took a huge-ass wing on the rear and then made it bright blue. And it looks very cool.
It's a concept. It's called officially the RM22E. And it's built, it's on the EMGP. So they're calling it the platform EMGP.
Well, that's what all the other platforms are called.
Aren't they something just GMP?
No, it's eGump.
Is it all eGump?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so once again, it's a concept, RM22E, all-wheel drive,
mm-hmm.
You know, pretty crazy-looking car that I suspect will get built because Hyundai has a reputation now of building their concepts and sticking pretty close to what the concept looks like. Even though the IONIQ 6 did kind of shy away from their original concept, but nevertheless, this thing looks badass. So big, you know, fat tires with big haunches, what you'd expect, a huge wing, just a really aggressive looking version of the IONIQ 6. But the one that we're looking at up here on the screen, that's the one that like everybody just freaked out and lost their mind. So they take us to N Night, and they do a presentation. They have all the N cars, and they talk about, you know, where the brand is. And you know where N comes from?
One more than M, because the head of the N division came from BMW M.
Well, their headquarters is in Namyang.
Okay.
I think that's how you pronounce it. And so the N comes from that. I have this feeling that they sat around the boardroom at one point and somebody said, we need a performance division. And somebody said, you mean like BMW M? And they said, yeah, but let's just go one further down the alphabet.
One better.
And then they came up with the fact that their headquarters starts with the N, and that's how they justified the N. Anyway, they came up with this concept. So back, get this, Tommy, back, this just blew everybody away. So they show us the IONIQ 6, and then like they open this door, and we're like, what's going to happen now? And then they blow in smoke from, you know, dry ice, and we're all like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And we walk into a completely different room, and there's this covered up car with this massive wing, and even covered up, it looks just incredibly interesting and very sporty. So in 1974, I guess Hyundai built the concept car called the Pony Coupe. And that concept car, you're tired. You want to talk? I mean,
no, I'm waiting for you to be done talking. Keep going.
All right. So this concept car was never built. But it was designed by Giorgio, whatever the heck that guy's name is.
Giugiaro, right?
Giugiaro, Giorgio Giugiaro, yeah.
No. Isn't it Giugiaro?
Giugiaro, whatever. Anyway, the famous designer who's done a lot of famous
Yeah, look it up.
And so he did this concept. The car is, you know, kind of cool. Obviously, it's not, you know.
No, it's Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Okay, so he did this
car. Well, that's the guy who did the car you're about to talk about.
Well, he did the Pony Coupe.
Well, I didn't look up the Pony Coupe. I looked up what the car turned into.
Anyway, so he did the Pony Coupe, and the car was never built because they didn't have an engine for it.
Uh-huh.
4 years later, he's basically tasked to design the new DeLorean.
Right.
And he said in a quote that he used the concept Pony Coupe as a starting point for the DeLorean.
Okay, so that's right. So Giorgetto Giugiaro at Atal Design did the DeLorean.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you look, when they pulled the blanket or whatever it is, the veil off this thing, it kind of looks like, you know, if DeLorean were to design a car today, that's what it looks like. And the car is incredible. It's a throwback, like 70s car. It's all angles and aggression and you know, like very mean and pissed off. It's got those classic, like almost BMW hooded eyes. Really, the only thing that kind of ties it into the Ioniq in the end are the pixel around the headlights. We're looking at it right now. It's just an incredibly beautiful, muscular, sporty car. And what makes it even more incredible is that unlike the Ioniq 6N concept, this one is actually a fuel cell car. So basically what you have this is a rear-wheel drive car, so only one you know, set of wheels is powering it. Two hydrogen tanks that live under that rear wing, and then a giant fuel cell that lives under the hood, and then a battery that's kind of in a T-shape. And so what they said was, they said that the fuel cell actually provides additional energy for the battery. So it's a battery, hybrid electric fuel cell powered supercar.
So what it could be is it could be like a range extender where you can run it on electricity plugging in at home. And then when the battery dies, instead of having a gasoline generator, it's got a hydrogen generator to produce electricity. That could be one way they're doing it. I think it's a terrible idea because, to be honest, fuel cells is a dying technology here in the U.S., so I'm hoping that if it does come to the States, it's going to be all electric.
Because fuel cells are hydrogen, right? You take hydrogen and you split hydrogen and you end up with water.
I love fuel cell cars. Well, yeah, but that's not the reason you have a fuel cell.
I'm saying that's what fuel cell, right? A fuel cell takes hydrogen and converts it to water and oxygen.
Hold up. You take hydrogen from the tank.
Right.
You combine it with oxygen in the
end
air.
Up with water, yeah.
No, but you don't end up with water.
Yes, you do.
Not the water that makes the car
H2O.
Move. No, it's not the.
That's what spits out of the car.
But it's not the water that makes it move.
No, it's a combination of the two.
No, it is. Okay, pause a sec. Right. So you got something called the fuel stack,
right?
You got hydrogen pressurized at 10,000 psi in tanks, which is run across this membrane, where it's mixed with oxygen in the air, and that creates electricity.
Right, and water.
The water is a byproduct.
Yeah, it creates water.
But the goal is not to create water.
Of course it's not.
The goal is to create electricity. You're confusing the lovely ladies and gentlemen in the crowd.
I didn't say the goal was to create water. I'm saying that's what comes out of the tailpipe.
Yeah, but you made it sound like the only thing it does is make water. It's not a.
Well, thank you for clarifying.
It's not a water production plant under the
hood. Well, sure it is.
So it creates electricity. And then the byproduct of combining hydrogen and oxygen is two hydrogen particles and one oxygen, which is water.
H2O.
Yeah.
And then that electricity goes to the battery, which then powers the motor, which then turns the wheels.
But here's why it doesn't work, because I've driven a lot of hydrogen cars. They're lovely. The great idea. You can refill them in a few minutes. But there's only currently hydrogen stations in California.
Right. But the Asian countries, including Korea and Japan, are really into hydrogen because unlike gasoline and diesel, they can't drill for it because they don't have a lot of it, if any. You can create hydrogen from the environment. So for them, it's a renewable resource because if given enough energy, you can just make as much hydrogen as you want.
Although here in the States, most hydrogen is created using natural gas.
Natural gas.
Which is also problematic. It's a great technology.
I mean, it takes energy to create hydrogen. So,
Where
do you get that energy?
Well, do you get it from the sun? Do you get it from solar?
Do you get it from burning coal? I don't know.
Do you get it from natural gas?
But I'm saying if you're Asian and you don't have natural access to gasoline or petroleum in the ground, then this is a great way to power a vehicle because it's a renewable that you can make.
Right. I'm curious, though, because it's a
It doesn't take millions of years.
You need energy to make it. So why not just take the energy you use to make it and stick it in a battery and push you down the road that way? If you already need electricity to make hydrogen, why not just take that electricity?
Well, because there's a lot of upside to it.
Well, so for example,
it doesn't take a long time.
That's right. And if you're in a really crowded country like in South Korea, you may not have the charging infrastructure needed to plug in cars overnight, for example.
Actually, I saw a lot of chargers at their gas stations and they were really cool.
Were they busy?
No, the chargers weren't busy.
Not the issue.
But you know what they did? You know how here we have like a charger, which is basically a box, and there's a cable coming out of the charger. So you have to pull into it, and then you take the cable and plug it into the car. There they had these rods that go up from the charger, and then the charger hangs from the rod. So basically it's coming down. So in essence, every charger is a pull-through charger if you're towing. So you can just pull it down and then plug it into the front, the back. It's a really good idea. I don't know why we're not doing that.
But my point is, lovely piece of design.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Incredibly excited for. But like, I have to be a little selfish because the vast majority of our audience is in the U.S. If they make it hydrogen, you're going to be able to sell it in California, and that's the end of the list because there's just not the infrastructure in any other state. I know it's supposedly coming to the East Coast, but it's been coming to the East Coast for the last 10 years now.
So the car they showed us was a mock-up, right? There is a running version of it. There's videos of it driving and such, but this was not that one. So this was a mock-up. So I looked on the side, and on the passenger side in the back, there were two little spigots. I suspect those are where you put the hydrogen in. Mm. I didn't see like a fuel flap for an electric charger. It could have one, right? So it could have both. It could be hydrogen and, because what Hyundai says is that the hydrogen is used to, are you okay?
Yeah.
Your phone fell, huh? The hydrogen is used to, I'm a little jet lagged, so if I'm a little...
I think we're both pretty tired.
Yeah, we're both pretty tired. So if I'm a little tired, I apologize. I didn't sleep all night after traveling 40
hours. So what you're trying to say is the hydrogen is supposed to give you more power.
It could be
power.
Like a range extender. It could be like a BMW i3 potentially.
But still,
you have to have two ways of filling it up.
And you're going to need a hydrogen station if you want that range extender capability. So the reason I'm on my phone actually is interesting. I want to take a quick pause here and also mention that DeLorean is actually back with a concept. You know that, right?
Yeah, it doesn't look anything like that.
Called the Alpha 5.
I saw the DeLorean concept.
Which is also gull-wing doors, kind of a not really a throwback. It doesn't look very much like the original. This one looks very much like a DeLorean.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody was saying is, you know, wow, with that squared off A to roof transition, the triangular quarter windows.
Those big air intakes on the side.
Well, even the headlights, you got quad square headlights, right? Yeah. That screams DeLorean. Yeah. But if you look at the picture of the Pony Coupe concept, it does look just like a DeLorean. I think Jajaro pretty much took the Pony Coupe and made it a little lower and wider, and you got yourself a DeLorean.
Which then became this.
Yeah, still pretty funny. Does this have normal doors or does it have gull-wing doors?
I think they're normal doors. It was funny. So there was a Q&A session. They all came up, the designer, the engineer who did it, right?
Yeah.
And the Japanese media was there, and they were asked. Japanese media is hilarious because they don't ask questions. They first make a statement. They're so polite. So you know how we're like, you know, why didn't you do this? Or, you know, what's wrong with that, right? The Japanese are like, first of all, we want to just congratulate you on the brilliance of your design.
Yeah.
I understand that, you know, the amount of hard work that went into this. And this goes on and on and on. And then they finally ask a question, right? I asked the most obvious question in my mind. If you look at the picture, and you can see it on our video, how do you open the door?
No door handle.
Yeah, and they said that's because it's a mock-up.
So I'm looking at the we'll post these pictures I'm looking at right now, but there's the concept from 1974 is actually very similar to this. And actually, it's said that the Ioniq 5 is based off the Pony, too. Not the coupe, but the standard Pony.
Yeah, so there were two cars. There was a Pony Coupe and a coupe. They built the coupe, but they never built the Pony Coupe.
There was a Pony Coupe and a coupe.
Yep.
No, there was a Pony and a Pony Coupe.
Was there a Pony and a Pony Coupe?
There was a Pony and a Pony Coupe.
So they built the Pony, but not the Pony Coupe?
That's right.
Okay.
The weird thing about it is, I think it's interesting that Hyundai is diving so deep into the history books here, because compared to every other car manufacturer, let's be honest, they don't have a very long history. So they're really, you know, it's amazing they're utilizing what they have. I mean, think about if Audi did this with cars from the 80s or from the 70s, right? They've got a huge lineup of cars dating... Well, Auto Union goes way back. But Mercedes, for example, right? So, they could make a car look like they did in the 50s or the 40s.
So a couple things that is mighty impressive. So when we walked in the room, they had a race car there, right? And that race car was powered by hydrogen. And that they built back in 2015. And so, I mean, they are continuing.
Well, didn't Hyundai come out and say recently they're not developing hydrogen for the U.S. anymore?
I think they walked away from hydrogen in the U.S., but that doesn't mean they walked away from hydrogen in the rest of the world.
Hmm.
Anyway, so they do have a sense of their history, and they are...
But what I love about that is they have such a very distinct sense of their history, considering they have a pretty small history. You know, 74 in the grand scheme of things wasn't that long ago.
Well, that's why the little you have, the more important it becomes.
Yeah, which, right? Is cool. I like that they're utilizing it. It's very cool.
So, look, hey, I applaud the company. I'm always, you know, in love with anything that's different. I don't know why, like, BMW or Mercedes or Porsche hasn't built a hydrogen-powered sports car.
Because there's no hydrogen here.
It seems like an obvious... unique and fun and interesting project for them. Even if they don't build it, it would be a unique, you know, I mean, these look, Tommy, right now we're in this cusp where, you know, the way that we're powering our vehicles is changing. And we don't know what horse is going to win the race. Most people would say, you know, it's probably going to be electricity, but you don't know. And if you're BMW or Mercedes, I think it's too important of a race to just kind of not hedge your bet and put it on a lot of different horses. And because other companies will, right? And who knows, you know, 20 years from now, this thing may be the standard. Maybe not here, but certainly in Asia, which when you think about it, Tommy, is a much more important market, right? Well, China's much bigger than the United States.
Very true. Now, it's not fair to say they haven't done it, actually. BMW, if you go back 10 years ago, they had a really big push for hydrogen. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know.
But
I'm not seeing anything public. Yeah,
but, I know there's They had these hydrogen-equipped models. And, well, first of all, part of the issue, let's be honest, they're not based out of South Korea or Japan. They're based out of Germany, which is a very different atmosphere.
I think the Germans hate electricity. So to take it to that next step, which is electricity multiplied by, you know, fuel cells, makes it even harder.
And the other issue, too, is, I mean, it's great to say, and it's very important that the Asian market is a major player in the world of new vehicles, which is absolutely true. But a lot of these companies, at least from our perspective, because we're based in the U.S., right, the news we get is tailored to the U.S. And we just don't have the infrastructure here. I think for it to be really successful, a company like Toyota or a company like Hyundai would have to pull a Tesla and actually spend the billions of dollars to build out their own hydrogen infrastructure, just like Tesla did with the supercharger network. That's the only way it's going to get done. Because we've been doing this for 13 years from now, right?
Yes.
And we've driven hydrogen cars pretty much since we started this. And every time we go to these press conferences and say there's only 50 hydrogen stations, but by next year there's going to be 100. And then the year later, there's only 50, but next year it's going to be 200.
And let's face it, hydrogen has its own problems, right?
It's very combustible.
Well, we know that, but you also need to compress it, which is also dangerous.
And you have to keep it at really cold when it's going in the car.
To compress it, you have to make it cold, so you know you can't just like deliver it.
And then the nozzles can freeze, and then you have hydrogen shortages. It's not by no means perfect. I think it's an amazing technology. I've driven the Mirai in California pretty recently. I filled it up. It was super seamless. It was just like filling up a gas car.
Look, Tommy, the other thing that I would say is, you know, we're living in a time where water is becoming critical. And, you know, you made fun of me when I said that it manufactures its own water.
Well, they're dumping it on the ground right now. So,
and there may come a time in not such a distant future where the water that produces, it may actually be valuable. Right now, the water that comes out is basically sterile, which is not good for drinking because it's basically... lacking any minerals, right? And that's not good for the human body. But you could add those and you could certainly use it for other things.
I mean, honestly,
it's like distilled water.
If you want to talk about the environmental impact, though, the big issue is that, and it's changing a little bit now, but the vast majority of the hydrogen produced in the U.S. is done through natural gas, right?
Which is a byproduct of natural gas.
Don't production. They like strip a mineral off of gas?
I think it's a byproduct.
I don't really know how that works, but I know it's involved in the natural gas process, which is not exactly that environmentally friendly.
Or maybe there's hydrogen naturally occurring next to natural gas deposits. So I think what's happening right now is, and if you guys know more about this than me, which is very easy, please correct me in the comments below. But I think when you're like watching natural gas production, I hate that word because you're not producing anything, you're just drilling
it. Refining it.
And not even refining it, just exploiting it. But you know those things that are burning at those? I think that's hydrogen being burned up.
So hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe.
Yes.
But it's hard to get by itself. It doesn't like to be alone.
And it's
it likes to merge with other atoms,
it's very flammable, it's very dangerous.
Well, on the cars, though, I mean, I know it's a big concern is the safety of hydrogen, but I've talked to these engineers, and they crash test the bejesus out of them. They shoot them. Shoot the tanks when they're compressed to make sure they don't explode.
Forget what's powering the 74, right? You could put a V8 under there and you'd have a successful car.
Oh, beautiful car.
Right? Yeah. It doesn't matter.
The other thing about hydrogen, which a lot of people don't know, is that those tanks only have a certain number of cycles before they have to be replaced.
Because they start to crack or something?
Well, it's like a safety rating. So I think on the Mirai, it's like you have to get 4,000 fill-ups before the car says, you can't fill me up anymore, you have to replace the tanks.
So that one has dual tanks in the back.
Which is also interesting because most of the hydrogen cars have like 4 or 5 tanks on the market. So that tells me that maybe the capacity on the hydrogen tanks is smaller and that maybe it is like a range extender.
I don't think they gave the number.
They give a weight? Because remember, the hydrogen is measured in weights.
They did give a weight. They did give I think, 500-watt motor. I think that's what they said.
Kilowatt motor, yeah.
But they didn't
pretty serious.
Yeah, they didn't give a weight.
Anyway, I'm not by no means an expert in hydrogen, but I do think it's a cool technology. I just wish that a company would commit to building it out.
And they said you can make that car. Right now it's rear-wheel drive, but you could potentially make it all-wheel drive. So just add another motor to the front.
You know where the magic in hydrogen is.
Where?
It's not in light-duty run-around vehicles. It's in heavy commercial applications where battery density is a big problem. So like long road over the haul truckers, you could refill really quickly, and it's much more energy dense than putting 1,000 kilowatt hours worth of batteries, well, a megawatt hour of batteries or whatever in your truck. So that's, I think, where the future of hydrogen lies. But that's a fantastic thing to look at. It's a beautiful piece of design.
Anyway, the other thing that we also kind of glanced over, because I didn't say, Hyundai did announce that they're making an N version. This is where I got all confused at the beginning, of the IONIQ 5.
Yes, that's great.
So there is an N version of that coming, and that's going to be fun and fast, and it's going to be like that, I'm sure, that kind of, you know, Tiffany blue color that all the N versions are.
Fantastic. Because, yeah, that's great.
Because they stopped making the Velostaran, you know.
Did that. They killed
this
it?
This month, yeah.
Oh, shoot.
So the Velostaran's going away, but they have officially announced that the IONIQ 5 N is coming, which is cool.
The first electric N, because right now there's the Kona, Elantra, and Veloster.
Right, but no N version of an all-electric car. This will be the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'll be really cool. My biggest issue with, and we talked about this, and I keep telling the designers this, and they all look at me like I'm from Mars. So, you know, what signifies how quick or fast or powerful a car is if it's an internal combustion engine?
Horsepower numbers? I don't know.
No, what signifies it? What signals it? You know, if you're on the road,
like wings and exhausts and tires.
Yeah.
And
so there's three things, right? There's like wings, spoilers, tires, but the most important ones are exhaust, right? So the more horsepower, the bigger the exhaust, or the more exhaust there are.
Typically.
Because all the other stuff you can fake easily.
Yeah.
You can put a big spoiler on.
Hold up. Talk about faking exhaust. The Germans love to fake exhaust. But that's very easy
that's
to do
new,
as well.
But it's much easier to fake a giant wing or a giant spoiler or a bunch of aero stuff on a car that doesn't really have the cojones, right? It's much harder to do that with an exhaust. So I keep telling people that there needs to be some kind of a way to signal how powerful an electric car is.
Okay.
Because right now they're saying, well, look, it's got a big air dam or it's got a big spoiler. I'm like, yeah, so what? Or the other thing that they're doing, which is even worse, is they're using audible signals, right? So they make it sound like a jet plane or whatever you want to make it. But that's also fake, right? You could put that on your scooter.
Well, you could put a fake exhaust on an electric car.
You could, but it would be stupid.
So what would you do?
My idea was like take like a Tesla coil and actually embed it in the back of the car, right? So you could see like the electricity going. You know what Tesla coil is, right?
Sure.
It's like where you take a rod and then you hold up the coil and the electricity jumps the gap and you've got this big spark that happens.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool if you like basically a flux capacitor that's displayed on the outside of the car, and the bigger the spark or the bigger the light, the more electricity, the more kilowatt hours the battery has, and the more kilowatts the car is producing, and thus the more powerful it is. So have a visual way of distinguishing like the everyday runarounds from that.
That's a fun idea. I do like that idea a lot, actually. I think that's pretty clever. But keep in mind, these companies, like the IONIQ 6, they don't even have wing mirrors to save efficiency and energy. So I don't know if they're going to waste it on a little Tesla coil in the back of a bumper.
I agree. And by the way, the IONIQ 6 has...
Did you pitch your idea to them?
I did.
Did they like it?
They looked at Nick Ostermars. They always do. Everybody does. So maybe I'm off my rocker. But anyway, the IONIQ 6 in most of the world has camera mirrors on the side, and it's got these little like wings on the side of the dashboard that serve as, you know, the
screens. Yeah,
and I actually liked it.
I don't know if I'd like it.
I liked it. I didn't have a hard time focusing.
I have a hard time. So like you can buy those right now with the review mirrors, right? Where you've got that little mirror up
those
on the
windshield. Those I have a hard time with.
And when you flick them on, it's weird because you're looking at the world in IRL in real life.
Yeah, I know.
And then you look up at the mirror and it's digital, and your brain's like, whoa, what happened there?
That bugs me. But the ones on the side didn't bug me. The focal point gets harder as you get older. Mm. Toyota does a lot of that. They move the instrument as far away from the driver. They did it in the BRZ, right? And the
BZ4X.
BZ4X, yeah, and the Solterra. No, not the
Solterra is a Subaru, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's way out there, way ahead
very
of
far of you.
And that's for like the very considerate of older drivers,
because for
older drivers it's hard to have that focal point be farther, like closer to you than the focal point of the road.
That's
so
interesting.
They move it way out there so you don't have to change.
Prius is like that too. It's way up on the windshield.
Yeah, yeah, they're very cognizant of people as they age.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyways, it sounds like you had a good trip. Did you have some good barbecue, Korean barbecue?
I did have incredible barbecue, and I met some really nice people. And I got to tell you, I was just impressed by the energy of Hyundai. This company is just rocking it, dude. I mean, you know, they've got the bit between the teeth, and you can tell that they're you know, hiring the best talent out there. So like the designer I spoke to was British, but he came from Volkswagen. You know, Biermann, Albert Biermann, who does their tuning, came from M. Peter Schreier, who does a lot of the design for Kia, you know, came from Audi. Mm. So they're either growing it at home, the talent, or they're buying it if they don't have it. And what you end up are concepts like the 74, where the world like is, you know, taking notice. So if you're, you know, if you're in Stuttgart, you might want to pay attention to what these guys are doing in Korea, because, you know, with like you said, with a newer company with less baggage, they can think outside of the box, where I think it's much harder for traditional companies, even here in America, like GM, to do that, right? They keep kind of doing the same thing over and over again, even though now is a time to be bold and different and unique.
That's true.
All right, so you came back from Mini Takes the States.
Yeah, so there's a mini rally they do every 2 years. It's actually kind of hosted by Mini, the company itself. It's called Mini Takes the States, and it's a 9-day-long road rally that starts in one part of the country and then finishes in the other, and you average like 600 minis a day from all over the country that start and finish, and they have activities and concerts, and it was a really fun time. So I flew out there just for the last basically day of driving to kind of go experience and poke around with what's going on. And it was very cool. So this year it started in Burlington, Vermont, and then made its way kind of down the East Coast and ended in Spartanburg, South Carolina, which is the BMW Performance Center and where they build the BMW X SUVs, like the X5 and the X7.
And as you know, BMW owns Mini.
Yes, of course. It's a brand within the BMW
group.
And yeah, so pretty cool day. So we got to drive some new additions. We drove the Mini Cooper Clubman. It was called the Untold. It had gold wheels, which are really in right now.
Let's skip to the chase, though. You also had a chance to take a look at, and the video is also up at LTFL.com, at the newest and greatest Mini, in my mind, the convertible SE.
Yeah, so haven't driven it yet, but we do want to get behind the wheel shortly. Yeah. But the Mini Cooper SE convertible is a concept right now, but it's looking pretty close to production ready. So you've got the electric SE Coupe, which is that little city car, which was for a while the cheapest new EV on the market. It started at $29,900.
But only 114 miles of range?
Yeah, pretty low range. It got undercut, though, price-wise by the Leaf. They had a price drop. And I think now the Bolt.
Yeah, the Bolt just dropped $6,000. Yeah.
But anyways, Mini decided
before they kill it.
Mini decided to do a convertible version of that, where they take the current convertible and they just basically electrify it.
So we had an argument. I said, I think that's the first convertible. And you said, no, that's not the first electric convertible. There have been others. And then I said, which one? And you said, two. And then I was like, let's play a trivia game and see if I can figure it out. And you gave me a hint. What was your hint?
Well, the first one is there's none available on the market today in the U.S. There were two in the past. The first one is made by the largest maker of EVs.
And then, of course, I jumped to Tesla, and you said the Tesla Roadster, and I'm like, I don't think that was a convertible. I
thought
that
was it was literally...
It had like a top that was removable.
But
like
it was literally called the Roadster.
but that doesn't mean it was a traditional convertible. So that's an argument that we had. We're not going to repeat. And then the other one, of course, you said is tiny.
Really tiny.
And then, of course, immediately let me know that you're talking about the Smart EV convertible, also is a weird convertible because it had this, it didn't really convert. It had this like
fabric roof that folded back.
Yeah.
And then people in the comments were saying that's not true. The Fiat 500e.
That also had the same kind of thing.
But it wasn't a convertible. Mm. You couldn't get the E in a convertible. That was hardtop only.
How about like the, what's the latest supercar that Porsche just bought?
Rimac?
A Rimac. Is that a convertible?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. I think that's a coupe.
No.
Yeah, there's been hybrids like the 918, right?
How about that the Twizy or Twiggy or whatever the hell that
thing
was.
The Twizy? Well, that's not in the U.S.
But was that a convertible?
That was a golf cart that had no sides on it. It was just a roof with no sides.
So it wasn't a convertible. It was just sideless.
It was just it was whatever that's called with no sides.
An Emmy's not a convertible.
No. I think abroad there might be some other convertibles. I want to bet.
So we know that Mini has said that the next generation of cars is going to be all electric, right?
By 2030, the whole brand will be, apparently.
But there's no new generations coming, right, for a while?
Well, that's the rumor, that the current generation of kind of Mini Cooper is going to be sticking around for quite a bit longer. Mm. And it's already been around for 7 years now. So they're going to have to do something to keep it fresh. They came out with the electric one, which is a great move. Those have been sold out for a long time.
So let's say they basically chopped the top off the SE, which is what they did, right, and made a convertible.
Well, more like they took the entire drivetrain of the SE and put it in a gas convertible.
Either way.
It's kind of the same thing, but yeah.
Will it get better or worse fuel MPG, range?
I think it might be worse.
You think so?
Well, because convertibles are usually heavier.
Yeah, yeah. So heavier.
So it's got the same 100.
Worse aero.
So the same 100, like 89 horsepower or something.
So we're looking at 114 now, less than 114. That's not
probably
an easy
I would guess
to swallow.
Around, I'm going to guess around 110.
Okay.
So yeah, and it's going to probably be more expensive if they do decide to build it. But it's cool. I mean, the cool thing about the EV market right now is we've got a lot of really good cars, but they're primarily crossovers and SUVs and sedans.
So you did a staggering video that really is interesting, and we haven't published yet. So let's talk about that. You went and did something really smart, Tommy. You took, so what we did was we bought the Mini SE. We've been driving it now. It's almost a year we've had it.
Yeah.
Right? And we put on a lot of miles. And then in the winter, we got some Michelin Cross Climate, which are these new all weather tires, which is basically a snow tire-ish that you can drive all year round. We put them on, and you were like, hey, I wonder what that did to the range. And so you went and got the original tires, which are basically all seasons, and put them back on. And you ran a range test comparing the original tire that came on the Mini to the all-weather Michelin. And the results were staggering. Tell me what happened.
Well, the thing that's even more interesting, so the original tire on the Mini is not an all-season.
It's not. Oh, it's a summer tire. You're
it's
right.
A pure summer.
Yeah.
And I was talking to the Mini guys. A lot of that is actually due to range,
okay,
believe it or not. So this was a staggering video because it went to prove just what an impact wheels and tires have on range. It can be a huge deal. So we ran this first range test, and it was mostly highway driving between 60 and 75 miles an hour. And they went 116.8 miles on the all-weather tires and these aftermarket wheels before it wouldn't move.
Which is still 2 miles more.
2 miles more than Mini says it'll go.
Says
it'll go. Yeah, which is good, actually, because that's not at 70. That's typically lower speeds when they rate those. So that was really impressive. But I felt like driving around over the last few months that had a fairly significant impact on range. So I drove up to our place where we were storing the tires, got the original wheels and tires, stuck them on. Now, these wheels and tires are very funky. They look like a UK plug socket.
Yeah, they're called the COVID.
No, they're not called
Corona.
The COVID.
Corona.
It was a disaster. When they launched the car in 2020, they called them the Corona-style wheel.
Yeah.
And then they immediately changed it to Power Spoke because it was like February 2020 when they named the wheel. Anyways, so the Power Spoke wheel is this funky design, but it's very aerodynamic. So it's got a lot of plastic that kind of blocks
covers
the holes.
Covers the holes, yeah.
Kind of like a smoothie.
It looks like a crucifix. Let's face it, it looks like a cross.
Okay, yeah, sure. But one with no holes in it.
Right, yeah.
So we put on these funky wheels that came with it in the original summer tires. I ran the exact same loop. It was the same weather. It was basically the same slight breeze. And we were driving along. We passed the point where the car ran out of electricity, and we still had 14% remaining. And we drove 135 miles and still had like 3% left in the battery.
Wow, that's
so
significant.
That's a full 20 miles more, which is a huge deal when you're dealing with the car.
That's over 20%.
With the car with only 114 miles of range. Yeah, it was enormously different. And that just goes to show what a change that tires and wheels can make. And the funny thing is the tires dimensionally on paper are the same between the all-weathers and the factory tires. So it's not like we were going to a big, fat, racing tire. It was just dimensionally, it should have been the same in terms of height and width, but it had a huge difference in distance.
Now, we did the same thing with the Lightning, and we found a very similar result.
Yeah, it was also like 6 or 7% different between original tires and all-terrains.
Yeah, we put in all-terrains.
The difference in that test, though, is we didn't change the wheels.
Right.
So we were still running on those original aerodynamic wheels.
Right.
When we bought the wheels for the Mini, we didn't even think twice about aerodynamics. We just got this kind of affordable set of alloys.
They were cool.
They're pretty cool, yeah, but it kills the range.
Yeah, and like I said, we're seeing a similar degradation on the Lightning. And by the way, I'm going to have to go to the airport in about 2 hours because I am flying to Alaska to drive the Lightning all the way up to Dead Horse or Prudhoe Bay. Andre did the first part of the journey. The boys did the second part, so I'm going to meet him in Fairbanks. I'm going to be there for the more exciting part. But we're finding out that putting a camper on it, which we did thanks to our friends at Pop-Up, four-wheel pop-up campers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And other tires has just incredibly killed the range on the truck, which is making this just a very challenging, because basically from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay is 500 miles, or Dead Horse, right,
mm-hmm.
without any charging. And so I'm going to have quite the adventure getting the truck all the way up there and back. So I'm a little nervous about that.
Well, the thing I've really learned over the last 2 weeks especially is aerodynamics is important in any vehicle, but especially in an EV, it can have an enormous impact on what it's like to drive and operate. So when these companies put billions and billions into like making sure their bodies are smooth, like that Ioniq 6, which looks like a bar of soap, they do it for a super specific reason. And it's amazing what even wheels and tires will do. We just had the BMW i4. M50i in, which had these 20-inch performance wheels on it from the factory. And just by getting those wheels, the EPA range drops by 50 miles just because of the wheels and tires.
So we have a cutting plan to get the truck there. But the most important part of the cutting plan is David from Yak Ranch.
Tumbleweed Ranch.
Tumbleweed Ranch now is coming along. And so he's going to be... He's going to be the key to helping us get the truck all the way up to Dead Horse. So we've just published a second episode in that series, the Lightning series. And if you want a T-shirt, watch the series. Dude, the guy, we geocached a T-shirt and a belt buckle. The guy found it within like 20 minutes of when we published the video.
That's awesome.
Crazy.
That's really cool.
Is that crazy?
I think they've all been found. The one in Colorado was found. Now California.
Yeah, I got to go stash some more. Those along the Dalton Highway are going to be a little bit harder to
get. Yeah, those ones will probably be a little longer.
You have to be committed to go get them.
Exactly right.
So, anyway, let's talk about some of the stuff that we have here at the office. You fell in love with a vehicle that I fell in love with, and that is the new Range Rover.
Yeah, so I know I've been kind of harsh in the past on some of the newer Land Rover products, like the Defender.
Yeah.
But this Range Rover is absolutely phenomenal. It is the best Range Rover, I think, that's ever existed. It's the full-size Range Rover. It's $124,000.
The one we have, yeah.
But it's just, like, it doesn't look that different than the old one, but it's one of the best riding cars I've ever driven. The interior's got more leather on it than a field of cows. It's just beautiful inside and out. It's nice to drive. It's great to look at, especially from the back. They did do some pretty big changes in the rear, actually. It's comfortable. It's quiet. Lovely vehicle.
Mm. And, you know, when I got to drive that out in California for the first drive, I'm always impressed by how Range Rover manages to take a car with 22s and still make it off-road worthy, because this thing has, believe it or not, a rear locker in it.
It does. 23s, actually.
23s.
Yeah. Right. Well, you can't really be that off-road worthy on 23s. Well, Case and I thought...
The tires are the limit.
It's like a rubber band around a 23-inch wheel.
You'll pop those by looking at them.
They need to do an off-road version like this package. You could even charge a lot more and people would buy it.
They call it the Defender.
Or imagine like the Bespoke Adventure Group or something. Give it some bougie name. People would buy it with like 19-inch wheels and a bigger tire. It'd be amazing. You can get like an equestrian package on it, which gives you special mats. You can get the
horses when they poop inside.
You can get like the Kentucky.
Don't get it dirty.
No, it's like special mats for your feet. It's got like a Kentucky Derby package where you can get like these leather seats in the tailgate.
So ours has the V6.
No, it has a straight six.
Oh, straight six. That's right. They got rid of the V6 supercharged. They now have a straight six. But there's also a 4.4-liter V8 that's sourced from BMW.
Which is a good idea.
Which is incredible.
If you're a smaller manufacturer like JLR,
yeah.
Why spend the huge amounts of money to develop your own engine?
When you can take one of the most powerful twin turbos in the market.
Take it from BMW, which has been doing this for...
Maybe it's a single turbo. I forgot. The old one was a twin turbo.
I don't remember. I think
the
it's
old
a,
one was a twin.
4.4. It might be a twin still.
Yeah, it's definitely a 4.4.
But yeah, why not take one of the best engines in the market and just pay them money for it and then spend all your money on design and off-roading?
Which is what they did.
Yeah, so really love that car. I think you're going to not find it for a long time because a new Range Rover has only come around like once every 10 years, I think.
Yeah, and I give Jerry McGovern, the designer, a lot of crap because, he's easy to give a lot of crap to, but he did a really good job in making this thing look both traditional and modern. That's not easy to do.
It's beautiful. We just had the Lexus LX, actually, the competitor to this at the office.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
Well, that looks like a tin shed compared to this Range Rover.
Ooh, harsh words.
Well, it's just flat on the front. It's flat on
it's
the side.
It's got a giant spindle grill.
And it's vertical. It's like a cliff. It's like, give it a curve. What are you doing? And it's not like it's not squared off like this N74 is. It's squared off in the same way that it looks like a bread box to me. I really don't like it.
It's funny, like, to pull off really classic and elegant and sophisticated design is very difficult. It's easy to go too far. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Where it becomes, instead of classy, it becomes gaudy. Instead of sophisticated, it becomes overwrought.
Yeah.
And I got to say, there is a little bit of that in the Lexus version.
Oh,
for sure. It's like they threw the kitchen sink at it. And sometimes less is more.
Right. Yeah, I agree completely. So Lexus is a very well-made car. I want to make that very clear. It felt like it was screwed together with 1,000 bolts to hold on the door handle. But I just didn't like the design inside or out. This dual stack screen thing looked like an Infiniti from 2012. Did not work for me. But this Range Rover, obviously there's going to be 1,000 comments about reliability, but I can't speak to that. However, it was a fantastic thing to drive. It's really good.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the other vehicles that we've had in our fleet and kind of give people an update. First and foremost, we finally got plates for our Santa Cruz. We're learning to love it, actually, driving it. I love that car. I really think it's the right car. It's a lifestyle car. There's two big complaints I have with it. The dual clutch shouldn't be in it.
Yeah, it's the wrong fit for the vehicle.
Yeah, it should just be a regular transmission.
Which you can get, but not with the turbo.
Not with the turbo, and if you're at altitude, you want the turbo. And the other thing that's driving me absolutely crazy is that piano black. It just shows dust. So all I do is wipe dust off the panel. Otherwise, you know, it's a brilliant car. We use it as kind of our shop truck. Never fails to start. Everything runs well, screwed together well. Just shows dust like crazy.
100% agree.
All right, and then we just did a video with our ZR2, which we will hopefully be Silverado moving on to a new truck that actually has been built, but sitting in, I'm giving away hints, it's been sitting in Detroit now for at least 2 months, believe it or not. We just can't get our hands on it. We did a video where we compared it to the Colorado ZR2. What'd you think of that truck?
It was good. Yeah, I think it's a little old, and we know there's a new one coming, but it was...
Not the old one, the new one, the Silverado ZR2 that we're getting rid of.
Oh!
We've only had that for like 6 months.
Yeah, it's a great truck. I really like it. I think it's got the fantastic amount of off-road capability. The new interior redesign is a big improvement over the old one. I think it needs some new engines. I'm getting kind of tired of the 6.2 V8. I'd love to see the diesel in the ZR2. That'd be phenomenal, that straight six. It's not a Raptor competitor, right? It doesn't have the wide body, doesn't have the additional power of a Raptor or TRX. But if you want the ultimate off-road rock-crawling full-size truck, I don't think you can beat it, especially with that front locker.
Yeah, and then, of course, we're now going up on a year of having our Bronco. We've gone through a bunch of different tops. We started with the hard top, which was squeaky, and then we went to a best top soft top, which I love, but it was a little bit loud, right? Soft tops are.
And now we're back to the hard top, but this time the one that doesn't squeak.
With the Sunrider.
Yeah, which is this little fabric bit that goes on the front that you can throw back.
Yeah, which lets you kind of give you the best of both worlds. But it's also a little loud.
Bronco hasn't broken. It's been perfect. Really good off-road. Good road trip or two. I just took it on a pretty big road trip.
Yeah, you took it far, dude.
Well, like 700 miles.
Yeah, well, that's
but
pretty far.
It was great. It was a really great car for a road trip. Kind of thirsty.
Yeah.
17, 18. It's got 35s on it, though.
I have found that at $6 a gallon or $5 a gallon, even non-thirsty cars feel thirsty nowadays.
Very true. Very true.
And then, you know, we were trying to sell our Golf R,
yep.
Which we were unable to sell over at TFL Bids. So I actually drove it this weekend when I got back. I took it out, and I'm really enjoying driving it. Now I'm kind of regretting wanting to sell it. So we'll see.
It's boring.
What do you mean it's boring?
It's boring.
It's fun. It's an all-wheel drive car in Colorado.
It's a little boring. It's a little sterile.
You know what? I just have to wait for the first snow, and the demand for that thing will be through the roof.
You can feel the German engineering in it. And when I say German engineering, I mean like very precise, but also very dull.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
It's a little dull. It's a great car, though. It's very fast. It's very quick.
And then if you're listening to this as a podcast, there are a lot of new reveals happening this week. So the Blazer, Tommy?
Blazer, yeah. Blazer EV is coming up shortly.
And over at Truck.
Raptor R.
R, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Andre actually got to drive it, so we can talk about it now.
Drive it?
Yeah.
He drove it?
I thought he drove it, yeah. He didn't drive it?
No, I think it was just a reveal.
Was it just a reveal?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think he drove it.
I was in Korea, so
yeah.
If you want to get a hands-on video, Andre did get to go to the reveal of the Raptor R, and that should be, once again, all you know, people say, you put out too many videos, and I'm like, just go to all TFL, save it as a little app on your phone, and you'll get all of our videos all the time. So Blazer, we're going to have, of course, we're going to have the Type R as well, Tommy, this week.
Civic Type R is coming, yep. So it's going to be a busy week, and then I'm going to Germany to go check out some stuff as well.
What are you doing in Germany? Mercedes, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go check out the EQXX.
Isn't that that new concept Mercedes that gets over 1,000 kilometers on one charge?
Yes, that's the one.
Really?
Yeah, that's the one.
And
I can't talk about the other one.
Okay.
Yeah, but but you'll see that this week.
Okay, so you're gonna be in Germany. Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna be in Alaska.
Yep, that's right.
It's just gonna be crazy busy. And I think Andre's gonna go drive some electric big rigs.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
That's not the case.
Oh, is Case going on those?
Andre's on vacation.
No, I think he's going on those. He told me he's going
Freightliner is Case. He's going this week. Mm-hmm. Andre's at the lake all week.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, be sure to stay tuned for the next podcast. We'll have it all summarize what we've been up to.
Yeah, and if you want to see everything, just go to alltfl.com. And I don't have to. Oh, and once again, we had somebody who filled the truck site with spam.
Saying that you won.
Just never
win anything on Telegram from us, I promise, or WhatsApp. We don't give away trucks.
We don't give away trucks.
Report them, ignore them. We've been deleting them, but they still pop up pretty quickly.
Yeah. Every time, you know, somebody from India populates our comments with this, people email us saying, have I won something? And if you're listening to this, we don't give stuff away. We're journalists, and we're not in the business of doing giveaways, unlike other YouTube channels. It's all a scam. Please don't get taken in by it. I would hate to feel like, you know, we've been used to make your life worse.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, keep that in mind. We'll see you in the next one.
See you next time. Ciao.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.